The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
It's bang on 9:30. What a lovely thing. Deirdre says, great memories. This is the sixth tune has elicited a very emotional response from people. Great memories of my mother, says Deirdre, coming home from night duty as a nurse, and my dad presenting her with her tea on a tray, and all of us lined up in our pyjamas, washed and ready for the late late. Great memories, isn't that cute? And Aidan in Wexford says, I love your choice of music, and as for the original late late theme, absolutely magic. Loving it all. Well, this is a great response. I'm so happy, and thank you for your generous responses on text. It's just tremendous. Louise Phillips, good morning.
Good morning,
Ryan. It's very nice to meet you.
And it's great to meet you too.
You are a best-selling author from Dublin, and you have plenty to tell us about. I mentioned Louise Woodward and the case that we will get into in just a minute. But when a lot of people think of Ranelagh mm-hmm. and Rathmines, yeah. particularly Ranelagh or Ranelagh, depending where you're from, and Dublin Six, mm-hmm. they think big houses, big money,
yeah.
big posh backgrounds. But it wasn't always that way.
No, well, for myself, I mean, even now, if somebody said to me, where did you originally come from? I say, oh, somewhere between Ranelagh and Rathmines. And they have this illusion of a type of person.
A bit of la-di-da's about that, yeah.
But I think it was part of this social planning back in the 50s to incorporate social housing with very sort of upper-class areas. Yeah. In reality, they never mixed or combined. So I lived in a place called Mount Pleasant, which were tenements, and probably the furthest thing from Pleasant you could ever find. They were these big grey structures, three or four stories high, and it was yeah. people on the poverty line, really, that lived there. So
it doesn't sit, does it, with your image of
no, with
Mount
like
Pleasant
sort of, you know, nice cafes and everything yeah. that you see today. But I mean, my husband is actually from Ranelagh. He's from a small terrace house, but like he was the private house end.
Yeah.
And he was warned as a child, if he was going past Mount Pleasant tenements, to run and never have anything to do with anybody that
really?
Came from there. And so when we met, like in our late teens, it was like, I was warned about you.
It was straight out of Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly. It was difficult times, you know.
In what sense?
It was difficult in the sense that I suppose for there was four children at home. My mum was quite protective. I think she was aware of the kind of negative social influences that could happen. So we would have spent a lot of our time just kind of playing directly outside the flat and not mixing necessarily with other children. But she was very entrepreneurial. Like, she used to do things like create swings indoors. And
did she?
She used to be a swing that she used to put up at the bedroom that myself and my sister shared with our parents.
Yeah.
And we'd sit on the swing indoors, like this sad little person. But
you were a happy sad little person.
Yeah,
yeah.
We were happy. And so I think I was kind of aware at a very early age of the difference between people who have a certain quality of life and people who didn't have a certain quality of life. And in that regard, I think that definitely framed me as an individual in relation to social awareness and that kind of a thing.
Of course.
Yeah, but it was there was fun times, because even though we had very little, again, kind of talking about my mum again, she was very big into education and, you know, people learning as much as they possibly could. Nothing you ever learned ever went to waste or anything like that. So, like, we would sort of have been really into sort of the space program at the time and lots of things like that. And I remember actually the time when the first moon landing, and talking to this friend of mine, Betty, who was my only friend in the flats, and telling her how exciting this was, and she hadn't even heard of it. And I was kind of going, how did she not know?
Yes.
And again, I think that was that sort of inkling in my head that actually some people don't know.
But you know what? I don't think that's necessarily, Louise, class-based, and certainly not even of the time. I think some people aren't curious.
Yeah,
I think for you, some people just don't. Like, if we're in a business, you're as a writer, you know, and as media, as a kind of media person, I'm gobbling it all up constantly, and I'll share it with my girls and go, oh, what do you think? What do you think? And you might find yourself saying, God, did you, what do you think? Did you hear about this thing?
Yeah, I know.
Like the moon landing. Yeah. There's a moon?
There's a moon.
Some people just are so focused on the micro.
We were kind of a little bit odd, I suppose, as a family compared to sort of people around us. We did kind of quite... I know a lot of people took registrations of cars and things like that, but we did all those sort of geeky things, you know, and
just randomly taking registrations.
Yeah, just writing a list of registrations.
And that's really geeky now. Yeah. It's kind of beautiful, actually.
Yeah, but you know, it kind of saved us too. So that was a really good part of it.
What about that palace of knowledge that requires no wallet, the library?
Yeah, I mean, again, one of my happiest memories is time spent in the library. And again, because we didn't have money for books, and like I even say to people nowadays, do you know there's this great resource where they give you free books? You'll go.
And DVDs. And, I mean, I know they're
exactly,
a bit passing, but so much more. Come on, sorry.
So my mum used to bring us to the library in Rathmines, which was a beautiful building. And I remember back in that day when you were 12 and you made your confirmation, you actually got your adult library ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, it was like, oh my God, they're letting me free in the wild, you know. So I used to read everything and anything, which was great. Because now, you know, when people are exposed to books, they're set in particular genres or type or young adult fiction. Whereas for me, it was just A to Z. And what am I going to find here?
Yeah. Everything. And is that, in terms of then 12 years old and school and everything, what did your background, do you think, prevent you from doing that you would have liked to have done?
Yeah, I think I had a sort of, maybe not as much confidence as I should have had, insofar as, you know, you kind of recognise that maybe you don't get certain things. And I left school when I was just after what they used to call the intermediates, and which was 15. So at 15, I kind of went out into the adult world because that was kind of the thing to do. You needed to go out and earn money and do all that kind of thing. But in some ways, that negative was actually a huge positive, because I was exposed to older people in the work environment quite young, which was, again, was very educational. And then I went back to study my Leaving Cert at night. And as a mature student, you know, you were in a class context that was slightly different, but also really exciting. And I had an English teacher in Mount Street when he actually taught us English and history. And he totally brought English alive for me.
You found the right teacher then.
Yeah, I mean, I remember sitting there in the class and the first night, and he said, this is the only night you're going to have to take down prescribed notes.
Great.
And I went, okay. And it started off with, you are a unique individual. Your experience with literature is going to be unique. There is no right or wrong answers.
What was his name?
Do you know what? I can't...
Tell me, you've forgotten his name. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
No,
who is this? Who
but
is this Robin Williams figure?
I'm really bad on names. And I actually...
Somebody might help. What year were you in there?
Oh, gosh. Wait, I have to go back. Oh, God. Probably around...
I've put
80.
You on the spot now, Louise. I'm being mean.
No. Probably around 79.
Okay. And where did you say it was?
Mount Street.
Mount Street.
Yeah.
We'll find him. A teacher that good has to be remembered. And he kind of brought you into the world of literature.
I'm terrible on names.
That's okay. And dates. Yeah. But that's okay. That's why God gave us Google. We'll find him. But the bottom line is that got you into that world then.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to just take two or three steps back to your early childhood, if I may.
Okay, yep.
Because it's informative to us as to where you went then with your most recent book. And that is to do with, and this is my question, was it to do with the nature of where you were brought up in the tenements in Ranelagh, or was it just life, the cruelty of the lottery of life, about your baby sister and your baby brother? Would you talk to me about them if it's not too difficult?
Yeah, I was age 4 when my mum went into Hollow Street to have my sister. And my memory as a child was waiting at home in the flat for my mum and my dad and my older brother to come back with the baby,
your
which was Monica.
Sister,
because at that point, My mum had been in hospital for nearly 5 days, so she was due to come home. So, like, I was there waiting. So, anyway,
isn't it funny that you're 4 years? Are you going to? Can you share your age with us now, or is that the rudest question?
Yeah, no, I'm 59.
You're 59, and here you are in 2019, all these years later.
Yeah.
And you're getting emotional because it would be weird if you weren't.
Yeah.
Because you were waiting for this beautiful, freshly minted sister
exactly.
to come home.
Yeah.
Do you want to keep going, or
yeah,
I can
sure.
move on?
So so for me, I think at the time, like, it was obviously great excitement. What I hadn't realised was that my dad and my brother had gone in to collect my mum. But when they arrived in Holles Street, instead of her being in the public ward, she'd been put into a private room.
Sure.
And that's when they discovered that Monica had died.
Had died. Okay. And do we know what had happened to her?
Well, we were always told growing up that, you know, she died of a cot test,
sure.
which is apparently connected, obviously, to the current novel.
Yeah.
But after my mum passed away, I got Monica's death certificate. So she actually died of sepsis, which would have acted really, really fast. But what I didn't know that day was that my dad had gone into town with my brother, and because we couldn't afford a proper pram, they brought in a doll's pram.
A doll's pram?
Yeah.
And that was meant to bring Monica home?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the three of them, my mum and dad and my brother and the doll's pram, all came home with the empty pram.
And you were four?
Yeah.
And you remember this so vividly, obviously.
Well, what I remember is my mum coming through the door, and she was like this sort of dark, shadowy figure, and she just kind of went straight to bed. I didn't understand.
She took to the bed, as the expression says.
And so, I think at that point, I mean, obviously I knew something was wrong.
Of course.
And I'm sure it was explained to me, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
Just gradually over time, I began to realise. And then a year after that, my mum had another baby, but he was stillborn.
Okay.
So I'm the baby.
So you're the baby.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? And it's just, I'm always struck by how a four-year-old you has that memory that's so profound and so etched into your heart and your soul, essentially.
Yeah.
That as you talk about it, the story's come to life again for you.
Yeah, and I think as I got older and I started to reflect on lots of aspects of it, I think, you know, I sort of grew up aware that the two children that followed me weren't as lucky as I was, you know. And so that in itself sort of kind of tells you to kind of grab life and to kind of do what you can.
I understand. I like the sound of your mum.
She's
that, like, that swing, the library, the education, the moon landings. Like, she was a giver of knowledge. She was a teacher.
She was
almost,
great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she was kind of an early feminist. Like, before, like, we kind of came along, like, steps to stairs. She used to work in the Ivy Markets, and then she opened a shop that sold shoes. And I think she would have been far more successful business-wise than my dad ever was.
You haven't mentioned your dad necessarily yet.
Yeah. He's, like, he kind of... When I think about him, like, I loved him a lot, but when I think about him, he was sort of one of those men that were trapped in the way he was supposed to behave back then, you know. So, like, he told my mum she had to give up work because now there was children and all that.
Wait a minute. What an interesting turn of phrase. He was trapped in the way he was meant to behave.
Yeah.
Do you feel that there was a progressive man trapped in the mores of his time?
Yeah. Like, I remember when we had our children, so he was quite happy to push the buggy with the grandchildren.
Really? He was ahead of his time.
Yeah, but he never pushed a pram like I was, according to my mum anyway, back in the day.
Isn't
so it was like, you know, he conformed to this sort of male
type,
yeah.
You had your own children, ultimately. How many do you have?
Yeah, three.
Three children. And I suppose as we all do when we become parents, we reflect on, God, so this is what they did.
Yeah.
And as you hit milestones in your life, you think, God, so they would have been this age. Go, oh, right, okay. You know, it's a strange thing. And I'm sure you thought about your folks a lot when you had your own children.
Yeah, I think, it's not that I can be fully sure, but I'm pretty sure that after Monica and then my brother, who was stillborn, I definitely think my mum went into a form of postnatal depression.
Sure.
And I had that with each of the three children as well. So it in a way, it was I suppose I had this kind of unique position through the looking glass that I remember being a child in that situation with a parent
yes.
that felt lost. And then I remember kind of feeling a little bit lost
of
as
course.
The parent.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And you're an emotional fish, which is which is really lovely. I can sense a real kindness from you. And I suppose that probably then, that's why I'm very happy with your success, because I think it's from the heart.
Thank you.
And you've earned it. And I think your mother would particularly be so proud of you.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And as I say that, I'm thinking about then you as a young mum, like watching the news as we all did that time when this young nanny, the long brown hair, little cold, some might say, in court. They had to hire, these American people had hired what they thought was like almost a Mary Poppins figure, English, proper, straight, comes along to look after the children. And the baby died on her watch.
Exactly.
Could you remind us the little...
Yeah, the trial was televised in 1997.
Yes, and Louise Woodward, yes.
Yeah, Louise Woodward. And at that point, like, I was a young mum. And I remember being kind of so fascinated with the trial, apart from the whole emotional subject matter, which was huge, but it was like... Even sort of with the O.J. Simpson trial, this whole thing about
the thing at the
it was
time.
Like a
You're
big,
right.
big, big drama.
Yeah.
And I was drawn to Louise Woodward because she was this sort of aloof figure, and I thought, God, it's so hard to know whether she's innocent or guilty.
Yes.
And although at the time I wasn't writing, I definitely feel like, as kind of crime writers go, we tend to love these grey areas of where is the truth.
The lack of certainty what drives the thriller.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. So I suppose it was the combination of one, you know, that just huge interest in the whole format of the trial, and then this young girl who could potentially be sent away for the rest of her life for something that she may not have done.
Yeah, and there, and you got thinking. Did you think then about your own mother's experience with your brother and sister and loss of life and young...
Well, not initially at that point, but a few years after that, my mum passed away, and as... children often do, you reflect on your parents and you start to see things that maybe you were always aware of them, but they kind of become more crystallised in your mind.
Yes.
And I know when my mum died, it was probably the first time, as I've said, I really experienced true heartbreak, because I could actually feel the kind of pain of it. And I thought about her life, and I suppose about my sister and my brother, and how hard it must have been for her. And actually, one of the things in the book that kind of said a couple of times is this expression, it's kind of okay to be fragile, it's okay to be strong. You know, there's times we're fragile, there's times we're strong, and both are fine.
And that makes us human, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly.
The book is called The Hiding Game.
Yes.
Congratulations to you, Louise.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming to see us today.
Yeah.
The first of many encounters, I hope.
Hopefully so.
And I think it's been a real pleasure to say hello to you. Thanks for your candour. Appreciate it.
Okay.
And I think you probably told a story that a lot of people will recognise and take some comfort from, actually. And good luck with it all.
Okay.
Thank
you so much.
Thanks, Louise Phillips.
Thank you.
The book is called The Hiding Game. That's one you're going to need for your shelf in the coming weeks, for sure, as the autumn trickles in, as the leaves fall. Could that teacher be Con Harvey or Jim Cook? Mr. Harvey or Mr. Cook, anything ringing a bell there? Not yet.
Not yet.
We'll go again. 51551. Louise Phillips, an absolute... Could it be Miss Seamus Purcell?
No.
Purcell.
No.
Nothing got shaken there. Okay, we'll get there again. By God, we'll get there.
Okay.
It's 12 minutes to 10. Back in a moment.